Stephen Boyle specializes in consistent prospecting. He's the founder and managing director of Print Republic, a UK-based online printing business. But he really has a wonderful engine going at a B2B lead generation agency that he founded called Marketing Republic. Stephen is a specialist in finding a consistent stream of prospects, one of the keys to reaching predictable revenue. Our guest is also quite the prolific writer, with a few books under his belt, including How to Be a Social Media Superstar and From Ordinary to Extraordinary, How I Transformed My Business in 12 Months and How You Can Too. So be sure to check those out. In addition, you can also check out his blog, and I'll put his blog and all the links in the show notes for you. In this podcast, Stephen reveals foundational elements of prospecting and how to scale your business, tips for starting conversations and handing it off at the right time. It's a very critical point that if you master that, your conversion rates will go through the roof. And the importance of looking at outreach or outsourcing for inbound and outbound. So if you're just getting started and you don't necessarily have the FTE budget, there are ways to outsource some of this work as long as the outsourcer buys into a framework and a process that can essentially work within your framework and process internally.
There you are.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I'm just outside London and
Tell me about you. So I found you, as you know, through a search.
Yep.
Cold calling 2.0 is what I usually search on. Yep. And you popped up. So tell me about what it is that you do and how you serve our audience.
Well, I mean, the story is very simple, where I read the book about, 5 or 6 years ago, it must be. I love reading. And I love trying to learn new techniques and new ideas and new business skills, etc. And something just resonated about it with me because, you know, I've got a printing background, had family printing business. Mm-hmm. I had a small team of about 5-6 salespeople, and I was always just frustrated where they were never quite doing what they said they would and what I wanted them to.
Right.
And I realized actually the problem was it was round peg square holes. Mm. Where they were good at closing deals, but they just didn't want to prospect. And, you know, they just, you know, made any excuse. As soon as you say, look, you need more clients, you've got to get on the phone.
Right.
You know, And they do it for an hour and they go, I've got to go out and see a client. And they're gone. They go and see one of their ongoing clients for a cup of tea or coffee and,
right.
You know, and not prospect.
Yeah.
And I just realized actually the problem was me. I had to learn new skills. I had to put new systems in place. And that's when I started learning, you know, as a printer, you're printing marketing collateral for people all the time.
Right.
But our own market, you know, printers that traditionally in this country anyway have got pretty bad marketing skills. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where I had to change. I had to learn new skills. And Predictable Revenue was one of the books that I did marketing programs and courses and seminars and continually learning. And but Predictable Revenue just resonated with me and we tested it and it worked, you know, amazingly. And we then just started to say, well, this has got to have, you know, but there's people out there who want this. There's people using telemarketing agencies, and I tried, pure telemarketing internally and outsourcing it, and it's
hard.
It's hard as hell. It's just.
Yeah.
And you have to put an awful lot in it, to a lot of money, a lot of time, over quite a long period of time to see if it works.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with a commoditized service or product like, you know, printing, especially with the, you know, obviously the internet, desktop publishing, et cetera, you know, demand for printing has declined significantly. And so it just didn't work. And I wanted to, you know, develop our services and our products and what we did. And I just lost the love, you know, from being in printing all my life and all my dad's life as well. It just changed, you know, and it just wasn't fun anymore. Whereas actually working with other entrepreneurs, other business, you know, development guys, sales directors, helping them grow their business, mm-hmm. is fun. And that's where I decided, right, well, I've got my printing business is called Print Republic, and the marketing business is called Marketing Republic.
Okay.
And we help people grow their businesses, and we use cold calling 2.0 as the foundation of, you know, core service.
Mm-hmm.
We do some inbound stuff, we do social media, we do some other things as well, but our fundamental service is helping, you know, become the secret sauce to our client sales teams by providing them highly qualified leads.
That's great.
So that's basically the background. And it's fun. You know, I actually really like it because, one, we've got a great team of people. Everyone gets it. You know, we've run campaigns in 21 countries. We've done it in Cantonese, in Mandarin, in Spanish, and obviously English as well.
Right.
We've got clients in Iceland, US, India, UK, obviously. You know, and it works. You know, it really works. So not for everything. There's some things, like with any prospecting process, you have to take into consideration. It's not the magic answer to everything, but with the right proposition, you know, to the right market, to a hungry market,
yep,
we get results.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because just this morning I had got an email from one of my colleagues who is starting to branch out into China, Spain, Germany, Japan.
Yeah.
And he's from UK as well. He knows that we all know, or we think we know, that there are cultural differences in Europe, France versus Germany versus even UK. And I have some clients that are in the UK as well. We have to craft those cold connection emails a little bit differently. We have to really take advantage of and study the culture.
Yes.
Of each. So how have you overcome that? What are the types of things you do when you're preparing for a cold connection email that is going to be processed through the predictable revenue framework?
I think the most important thing, like with any prospecting, is testing. You know, because, you know, there's no point just saying, well, you know, cold calling 2 works. Let's just, you know, suddenly go mad and, you know, ramp up a program straight away. With any marketing campaign, but, you know, direct mail, telemarketing, you know, anything, you test. And that's, you know, of course, it's research. And when we go live, we want to talk to not just our direct client, you know, the key person or director in that business, but more importantly, the guys on the front line, the sales guys.
Right.
So, you know, they're the guys at the coalface of the sales process. They know their clients. They know their prospects. The more we get those guys on board and start to understand what it's like for them and what their clients are like. And the most important thing we like to do is try and model success. I modeled cold calling 2.0, and with the client sales process, you know, we just want to model their best clients, not just their work, you know, any client, but, you know, lots of us have got clients who drive us down on price, you know, cost of service them because they're so demanding, it's so high. We don't want those sort of people, really. You know, you've got to really think, who's your best client? Where do you add maximum value to? Mm-hmm. So people who appreciate that value, how do you model that and profile that and find more? And so we start small. We start with very small amounts of data, very simple emails, and we find out what works. And then you get feedback throughout the process of, firstly, the email, but also the telephone calls. And you start to understand how people behave, what sort of conversations you have, and it's all part of that learning loop, really. You've got to make sure, it's really important to know what happens after you've handed a lead over to our client sales team. We want to know, has it been successful, has it been bad, is it, you know, is a poor lead, because we don't want to be blindly carrying on prospecting. And it goes for an internal team or whether you're an outsourced provider like us. You need to know what's happened after the handover to a sales team. You know, if it's converting quickly into a lead, you do more of that. If it's really not, it's a bad lead, find out what's wrong with it and if you can change that. And I think that's the key for us, is always learning,
right?
You know, and always refining that process. And once you've kind of got it right, you then scale it up.
Mm-hmm.
But you never take for granted that you've got to keep testing all the time.
Another thing too is that when people read that book, they immediately think instant success. And
yes,
a lot of times the struggle that I have working with clients is there's a crawl, a walk, and a run, what I call stages. And Aaron used to say this as well, that, you know, we could hit a home run right out the gate, but it could be a one hit wonder. You know what I'm saying? So what do you find on average? I know this is a kind of a loaded question. It's really based on probably the up market or wherever you sit. But what do you find is a typical ramp from a crawl to a walk stage where you're actually starting to see some consistency, but it's still not quite there?
I mean, this is the golden question that, you know, every one of our prospects asks us. How many leads can I expect from a campaign?
Right.
And I always turn it around to say, what are you doing now? How effective is that? How many leads are you generating from that activity? And I would least expect to match that, if not improve on it, with a systemized approach. It's all about how much effort you put into it, how consistent you are with that system, and what your marketplace is like. Because I said, because we're not just doing it for our own business, we're doing it for a whole range of different services and products and clients. Yeah. Everyone is different. Some clients we're generating, a new lead every single day, a qualified opportunity every single day. Other clients, they're happy with one a month because, it's worth 4, 5, 6, 7 figures to those people.
Right.
And the lifetime value is excellent. So it's worth putting the effort in. Just, if they find one new lead a month and convert 1 in 2, 1 in 3, it's worth whatever, $500,000, $1 million or more.
Right.
That's a good, that's a good return on investment.
Yeah.
If you're selling something for, 4 figures, you probably want more than that.
Right.
But again, if you're selling to a marketplace that has real apathy about your product and service, whatever the system you use, it's really hard to generate massive results, because if people aren't hungry for it, there's no demand, it's commoditized or whatever it is, it's really difficult to do. And I think typically one team, key SDR, probably with a consultative sale, high value, we're looking somewhere between 5 and 15 opportunities a month, that kind of range. Mm-hmm. A good month is probably 15. Mm-hmm. An average is probably 7 to 8, with one team. So that's from our type of clients, the people we work with, who've got that high value consultative sales process and products and services.
And that was what the book was, designed on. The waterfall for the book, I still use the same waterfall. Even though the book was released in 2011, like 2009. So it's really outdated. But I still use the waterfall from that book, which is very simple. It's 50 emails a day per SDR. So that's 250 emails a week.
Yeah.
Of those, we have 100 conversations, meaningful conversations. And what I mean by that is if you're driving down a highway, a meaningful conversation means you move to the next mile marker you exit off the freeway. So that's a meaningful conversation. You've learned something. So we want 100 of those. Of those, we get 10 to 15 to go through our disqualification or discovery call. And then of those, 8 to 10 move to a sales qualified lead status, or SQL we call here in the States.
Same here. Yeah.
Same there. Okay. And then, like you said, the handoff is so important, because we have this metric that is SQL to SAL, which is sales accepted lead. And so it sounds like you already covered that, because one of the things that I see a lot is we're off prospecting, doing our thing, but then when it gets to sales, they don't accept the leads. So it goes from, our goal is somewhere in the 90 to 95% acceptance, but I've worked with some clients that was down in the 40% range.
Really?
Big disconnect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big disconnect. And some of it is culture. Some of it is the sales reps in the field want close business. They just want to go out and close it. But, some of these leads have to be worked as if they're starting from scratch, but we have the connection. The cold connection is now warm. They have a need. We've defined, we've used some type of disqualification criteria, but there is still disconnect. So the SQL to SAL, which we don't talk about in the book, is something that's really very important for us here. Because that drives predictability. Like you said, absolutely, going all the way to close one.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think we find that the clients we work with, they've got a problem. That their sales team need more leads.
Right.
So the good thing is that the handovers are all, they're actually really grateful and eager to take those leads on, because, that's fodder for those guys. That's what they want.
Right.
So, I think there's always that learning curve with as soon as you start a campaign, to understand what a good lead, what an SQL looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not black and white always, especially, when you're selling to, you know, large organizations, large corporates, you don't phone them up and say, I've got this amazing product, I'll send you over an order form. You know, it's
yeah,
you know, it just doesn't work like that, does
right.
it? It could be our client sales process vary from 3 months of minimum probably up to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all about, you know, I always say, you know, my job title was chief conversation starter, because that is what my business does.
We start conversations. Hey, you stole that from me.
I did steal it from you. That's exactly what I did, because it is absolutely true.
It is true.
That is what we're about. You don't close deals on the phone there and then with this sort of process. We
right,
don't.
Right.
We start conversations. And
right.
I absolutely thought, my God, that sums it up in 3 words. We start conversations. And
right.
yeah, and that is what this process is about. And I think that is what people get once we explain it to them, you know,
yeah.
and that. So when you're handing over that lead,
right.
you've just started the conversation, you qualified, and sometimes you hand it. Sometimes we have email responses that, you know, they don't respond for 3 or 4 weeks, and all of a sudden you get an email back, or they don't respond to anything, a call or email or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the blue, you get an email back, and you can see the trail where it's gone around the business. And it's a senior person who says, yeah, we're ready to talk to you. When can we meet?
Right.
And it's like, wow, we haven't even spoken to these guys. And, you know, they haven't responded to anything. But I always say to our clients, you know, we're in the interruption business. You know, we're ready to speak to those prospects right now.
Sure.
Doesn't mean they're a bad fit if they don't respond. It just means they're not ready. And you can't force them to be ready now if they're not ready and they don't want to speak. But doesn't mean you don't persevere and you don't, you know, at the right time. Long as you're still persevering to chase that lead or that prospect, you know, that when they're ready, they're ready. You can't make it happen. You know, these guys are busy and, you know, doing a, you know, when you're selling at a high level,
right?
You know, you really do get engagement with cold calling too, but only when they're ready to do it. You know, and that's the whole
exactly.
point.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, like you said, there's breadcrumbs that we leave,
yes.
And one of the things that I like to share with clients initially is you're going to see a spike or a little bit of a lift in inbound because we're reaching out to these people. We are resonating with some people, but they may not reply back. But all of a sudden, you'll see them on the website poking around, or they fill out a form, or they download a white paper.
Yeah.
All of that can be attributed to the outreach cold connections because they all of a sudden are waking up out of their sleep, you know? So that's
You're putting yourself on their horizon, aren't you? And, you know, and that's the thing.
They
may never have heard of you before, but if you keep, you know, that gentle poke, you know, every now and then to go, oh yeah, I recognize that. And all of a sudden they start, you know, investigating. Some people don't like to suddenly have a salesman call them up.
Right.
They like to do their own research, and before they take a call or respond, they like to make sure it is a good fit. They're not wasting their time. Just, you know, and that's how it works sometimes.
Yeah. One of the things that's really frustrating sometimes for me is this overwhelming sort of massive, let's just do inbound, you know. And the problem with that is there are 5 levels of awareness. Inbound really deals with interested people that are aware of a solution to their problem. And then also people that are ready to engage. But there are 3 other levels that, when we're doing our outreach programs, we're working with those 3 levels, which is the unaware level. They don't have a clue. They don't know they're not happy. So you have to kind of wake them out of their stupor and say, yes, this is a problem and you should be aware of this.
Yeah.
And then you have those people, it's like you open the refrigerator door at night and you know you're hungry, but you're not quite sure what's going to solve the hunger.
I know the feeling.
Right. So that's also our domain. That's also where we say, here, this is a really great cheesecake sitting right here that you absolutely have to have.
Yeah.
So, I think that it's a disservice when you put all your eggs in the one basket. And not outreach doesn't work for everybody. But when it's blended with all these other mechanisms, even direct mail in the States now, we're sending postcards out again. Why? Because it's a novelty for people to get a postcard. We
absolutely
embed it into our outreach streams of, you know, we do the postcard and then we may follow up with a phone call or an email, but it's in a sequence and it's in a good rhythm. But we experiment with everything like that because we don't know what's going to resonate with our clients, intended clients.
I totally agree, because I think, yeah, it is a novelty, you know, as I say, from a printing background, DM was a huge part of our business. You know, we did millions of pieces of DM. And all of a sudden, it kind of went off a cliff, primarily because our clients are financial services. And then in the crash, you know, that kind of stopped. Mm-hmm. So that's when we had to, you know, look at other ways of doing it. But it's definitely coming back. We're still, you know, we're seeing an interest again in DM from clients as well. But right. as long as it's in an integrated campaign and it all sings off the same hymn sheets. Mm-hmm. But you're right with the inbound thing. And I have this conversation a lot. So, you know, we've got inbound campaigns going on. And for me, my you know, that works very well for some people. The trouble is you don't know who, apart from paid traffic, you don't know who's visiting your site. You know, they could be your best ever client. Mm-hmm. Or it could be someone who's just browsing and they're never going to buy, but they're interested in what you do. You can't always determine what it is, but with an outbound campaign, you're defining who it is you're reaching out to. You're profiling them, and it's much more targeted.
Yes.
You know, you might get a million visitors to your website, but if no one buys, it's just ego, isn't it?
Right.
You know, but I'd rather be having 10 conversations with really good prospects mm-hmm. than have a million people to my website with no sales.
Right.
So that, yeah, that's our take on it. So,
well, that's what I describe as the minnows versus whales. You know, in the book we called it, we cast a wide net and you're reaching out, but you're going to get a lot of babies in with the big fish. So, you know,
you're
outreach
right.
is all about targeting the accounts in that quadrant. I don't know if you remember in the book, but it's the highest probability of closing with the highest revenue potential for you. So
yeah.
That's what we're going after. And we have to be respectful of where they are. Like you said, when they're ready to buy, they'll talk to you. But our job is to continually ping them with relevant content and relevant messages that get them sort of leaning in, thinking, you know, this might be something that I could use or that I need, you know.
And
we keep after them. We keep after them, but in a way that's, as Aaron used to describe me as, patiently persistent. You know?
Well, that's sales, isn't it? That is the art of sales, really.
Yeah,
you know, you don't go in like a bull in a china shop and easily get results. You have to be persistent. So many salespeople give up after I don't remember all the stats, but it's after, I think, two or three.
You know,
and then if you keep going to 8, 9, 10, you've got, you know, the odds of converting greatly increase.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So, you know, it's that perseverance. And that's the pain we solve for our clients where, you know, if you've got a sales team, you know, they're prospecting, their pipeline grows, they then try and close those deals. While they're doing that, the prospecting drops off a cliff.
Right.
And they close deals, and then they start again. Whereas, you know, we provide the service where they're consistently prospecting all the time and their sales team are just focusing mm-hmm. on closing deals. You know, and we keep, you know, replenishing that pipeline all the time.
Right. And, you know, the separation of roles is one of the main principles of the book. Not everybody can do it. So, you know, smaller companies may have just two salespeople. So what we try to get them doing is let's get in a rhythm. So Tuesdays and Fridays or whatever day, Tuesday, Thursdays, let's take the 2-hour block time and that's our prospecting time. And we close out all distractions so that we're just prospecting.
Yep.
You know, as soon as we can, we move to a separated model. But sometimes we don't have the luxury of that, especially in the startup community where they're just struggling to, you know, to get a team together. So I don't know if you've experienced that, but on the smaller guys, you know, we start them off. If there's one guy, we start them off with half of the time prospecting, or we look at the balance of what they should do. The other thing too is for us now is the focus on account-based selling.
Yep.
Where AEs, account executives, have their top 20 accounts or top 10 accounts, whatever it is. And we teach them how to sort of partition their day so that they are doing prospecting into those larger accounts as well. So the model has been sort of morphed and hybrided all over the place. But
completely.
At the core of it is we've got to set the time for prospecting. And we call it block time. And you've got to do it consistently because that reduces that peak and valley of the pipeline.
I think the mistake I made in my printing business was that hiring what I thought were expensive, you know, experienced, you know, capable salespeople, mm-hmm. it kind of, that was sales tied up.
Right.
You know, actually, the realization when specialization in roles is absolutely crucial. Now, as you say, most salespeople probably can prospect, but once you're established and you're at a certain level, I think in my experience personally and the clients we talk to, those guys kind of don't want to go back to doing that. It's kind of like a credibility. And I did that when I was starting out.
Junior.
it's a junior role, and now I'm just dealing, you know, with it. I'm signing the big deals.
Right.
Whereas there's nothing inferior about prospecting or beneath people. It's equally as important as closing deals.
Yeah.
It's just the mindset, I think. But this is fine as long as there is a consistency in and a dedication to that process.
Right.
And process being the absolute crucial factor for me, because it's so easy, and we see it all the time. I'll give you an example where we had a client who, about a year before we started working with them, we're at contract stage, the day before we're supposed to go live, waiting for the contract, and the marketing director called me up and said, "I'm really sorry, Stefan, the CEO's pulled the plug on this deal. He wants to bring it in-house." So, okay, fine, you know, this stuff happens. You know, and what they did was a classic thing where they hired two telemarketing people, they bought a list, they wrote a script, and then they left them to it. And then 9 months later, he called me up and said, "That contract, I've still got it at my desk. Is it still, you know, viable?" I said, "Well, yeah, apart from the dates, it is. He said, "Why?" I said, "Well, we did have two people for 9 months, not the same two people, because, you know, one left and one had to be replaced, one got fired, you know, but after 9 months, I hadn't created a single opportunity." And the perception was it was cheaper and a better skill set to bring it in-house than was to outsource it. But very quickly, you know, we were 80, 90% of their pipeline, you know, just because we'd had a proven process.
Right.
And, you know, and we worked with them for about 12, 15 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but it was amazing, you know, 9 months of the cost of two people without a single opportunity.
Right.
That was transformed in a couple of months, really. And they kind
That's
of like...
It's a great story. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the marketing director knew. It wasn't his decision. He was sort of gutted.
Right.
That it wasn't going ahead. But the CEO had, you know, pulled rank, I guess.
Yeah.
But proven to be wrong and was brave enough to go, "Actually, we're wrong. Let's outsource it." And, you know, we massively helped transform their business. So,
yeah. So those of you who are listening to this broadcast, I mean, it's... The sales process framework, that's predictable revenue, and soon to be the book that I'm releasing called Predictable Prospecting. But it is a model that can be outsourced or in-house. And here Stefan's talking about an outsourced model that works really well.
It really does. And, you know, we speak to people all the time, and some people just want to do it in-house, and I'm fine with that. You know, it's whatever works for each individual business. I only want to take on clients who really want to use our services. They don't want to do it in-house. They want to stick to what they're best at.
Right.
And that may well be closing deals. They just don't want the aggravation of sourcing data, creating the email, you know, content, following up and being persistent and consistent at that.
Right.
They just want to close deals. And that, you know, that's where we come in. But I don't mind, as long as businesses are doing an element of, you know, each part of the sales process to get results.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all, you know, that's the important factor for me. You know, I don't want to take anyone's business that for people who aren't, you know, who don't want to use it and don't value it. It's important to decide what is right for each individual business. You know, it's more than feasible to do this in-house.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to be dedicated to it and learn and have the right skill set, the right management to get better at it, because you don't hit the ground running day one. It can take time.
Yes.
You know, and you have to have the skill set internally to monitor what's happening, you know, with every, you know, each email in the sequence, the response rates, what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you refine that? How do you come up with the ideas to make it better? And then obviously once it gets on the telephone as well, the same thing. That's the important thing. You don't just say, right, well, I will use this process. We will buy data, we'll write emails, and off you go, and it's done.
Right.
There's the ongoing learning, and that is the important fact. If it is in-house, that those daily analytics of understanding what is going on in your prospecting, so over time it does become predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you try and improve that predictability as well. But ultimately, you know, this Rome wasn't built in a day, and with a prospecting process, it doesn't just happen. You know, as you say, sometimes you come out of the blocks 100 miles an hour and you're really amazed, you get results really quickly. Other times it can take from anything between 1 week and 6 months to really get it right.
Right. I usually say 3 months because we go through an assemble process, and a lot of that is finding out why we matter in life, you know, and that those discussions are tough. You know, why change? Why should people change? Why change now? And why you?
Yeah.
And so we go through I have now a 28-step process that I get people on board with, which is an assemble process, an activation process, and an optimization, which is really necessary in order to continue to build consistency in your lead gen, you know, whatever framework you're going to be using. But I think that, you know, 3 months is a good time. We certainly have done it faster, and we've certainly taken longer to do it. But, you know, 3 months is like the number. 90 days, if they're very committed to working through the assemble piece, then we have a good shot.
Well, all our contracts start with a 3 month term.
Yeah.
For that exact reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then typically it just rolls.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always say, you know, whatever process you use, there's still the, you know, individual elements of it that you have to test to get right.
Right.
And, you know, so if someone's doing it in-house already, and then you outsource it using that knowledge, of course, it hits the ground quicker, you know, and gets up to speed.
Yeah.
But if you're starting from scratch,
right,
I always say 3 months. It's exactly the same as you, because it really does take that time sometimes to get it right. You know? And even then, it can sometimes take longer. You know, it's not a clock. It doesn't suddenly get 3 months and you've got magic. You know, it's an ongoing process. And sometimes you almost don't know you've hit it. Because, you know, you're just working continually to, you know, to make things better.
Right.
But when you start looking at the trends, that is when you can start seeing, you know, this is the parameters that we're working to.
Yes.
And then you know.
Perfect.
But, yeah.
So if I am looking to have a service put into my company like yours, how do I reach you? What's the best way for us to get a hold of you?
Well, Marketing Republic, Google, you know, just Google that and you find us, or my name's Stefan Boyle, but or on Twitter, at MKTG Republic.
Okay.
YouTube, find, you know, I'm there. I'm Instagram, kind of a bit everywhere, really. I think, like, you have to be.
You do.
But,
you really do.
Google Marketing Republic and we come straight up. So.
And LinkedIn, you're on LinkedIn.
Find me on LinkedIn, yeah. Definitely, yes. And we actually use similar principles of cold calling too on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. I have a whole process in place for clients. And that's what we were talking before about the sales reps, the AEs. Instead of calling it prospecting, I call it networking. And that seems to resonate better with them. But it's still, it's a process of building your network and on LinkedIn. But it is at the heart of it, prospecting. It's cold calling. It's the ability to start conversations with people we don't know.
And what's really interesting, I find, because it is deemed to be a networking site, is that people still use the same principles as anything. Social media, it's a business social media platform, but they launch into it sometimes. I get messages all the time from SEO companies and, you know, outsourcers, where I've no idea who they are, and I get a first message is an absolute essay, you know, 1,000 words about them. So I don't even know who you are.
Yes.
You know, apply the same principles to, you know, reaching out, building relationships, engaging those people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, exactly the, you know, almost exactly the same principles of cold calling too on LinkedIn. You know, same for us. We do for us, and we're building LinkedIn into our client campaigns as well.
Oh, that's great.
The same reasons.
Yeah.
So a dual approach. So. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate speaking with you about this, and I think everybody's going to learn a lot from this phone call.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. Well, thank you. It was really nice to speak to you.
Thank you too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now.